Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Clop Hill, a small village in England that is shrouded in a chilling mystery. Here you will find the isolated and windswept Church of St. Mary the Virgin, though it's better known as the Black Magic Church. Brace yourself as we delve into a harrowing tale of grave desecration, animal mutilation, necromancy rituals, and wandering ghosts. Our path will also lead us to the story of a traumatized English vicar who was almost driven mad by the dark deeds carried out on this church's unholy ground. And stay tuned till the end, when I tell you of my own scary experience up there at the old church. I'm Peter Laws, and I hope you'll join me as we uncover the haunted horror of Clop Hill and the story of the church that terrified a nation. There are actually two St. Mary's churches in the Bedfordshire village of Clop Hill. One of them is a vibrant and busy church with regular services and summer fetes. But this was not the first St. Mary's to be built, because if you walk about 650 metres up the hill through the winding road with its overhanging branches, you'll find the other St. Mary's, which was originally called the Old Parish Church. It was built in around 1350, and while the church did see some refurbishments in Victorian times, it was still classed as really too small for the local congregation. The rector at the time did have plans on expanding the building, but then he fell ill and he died in 1843. And so when the new rector arrived, he made a rather drastic decision. Something about that hill didn't feel quite right to him. He believed God was calling the congregation to build a new church much closer to the village. And that was built in 1848. It only took 1 year to complete. But this left the original old church sitting up there on that lonely hill. And so they decided to convert that into a mortuary chapel. It seemed like a fitting place to house the dead. They knocked down the galleries and the chancel to make way for the bodies, which would be a portent of things to come. Yet the old church was barely used after that, and things got much worse in 1956 when the lead was stolen from the roof. Now exposed to the elements, the place was doomed. So the rest of the fittings were removed, and the building that had once been the spiritual heart of the village was left to decay as a forlorn and forgotten ruin. Few locals would ever have imagined, however, that the old church would soon be making national headlines. Not for being a holy place, but for quite the opposite, because the papers would soon call it the Black Magic Church. Before we dive in, I'm just a tiny channel, and I just would really appreciate it if you could consider subscribing. It really makes a difference. Thanks. It was Saturday on the 16th of March in 1963 when two young boys decided to ride their new bikes on a long cycle ride. Calvin Smith, aged 13, and Duncan Stein, aged 12, set off from Leegrave in Luton, and they cycled north until they wound up in a small village surrounded by fields. It was Clop Hill. When they cycled through the high street, something caught their eye. They happened to notice the old church sitting up there on the hill, and they felt the urge for one more push, and so they cycled up that winding, lonely slope. Maybe they were aware of the dark history of this place already. You see, there's another reason Clop Hill had made the papers in that decade. It was due to a murder. In 1961, a young couple were driving nearby when a man suddenly climbed into the back of the car with a Smith & Wesson revolver. and he forced the male driver to aimlessly drive around for over 4 hours until he had them stop the car on the A6, not far from this old church, on a section ironically named Dead Man's Hill in Club Hill. And the man tied the woman's wrists together and then suddenly, without warning, shot her boyfriend in the back of the head. He then raped her and forced her to pull her boyfriend's body out from the car and then shot her several times in the legs too. She pretended to be dead, but she survived. The killer drove off, and a man called James Hanratty was charged with the man's murder and was hanged. Well, the boys may well have known about this murder since it had happened only a couple of years prior to their cycling visit to Clop Hill, but it didn't really seem to bother them much. Shattered from the long ride, they reached the top of the hill and pushed through the old church gate, letting their bikes drop onto the grass of the churchyard. The ruin of the old church was surrounded with barbed wire, but it didn't look too high, so they dared each other to climb over it. Just one little look into the old crumbling building. It was about 3:30 p.m. Now, ironically, the two boys had said that they had found the place to be extremely tranquil up until this point. But when they stepped foot into the church, everything changed. What should have been a place of peace turned into something from a horror movie. The two boys could barely believe what they were seeing. There in the middle of the old ruined church was a circle of human bones looking dirty and yellow, certainly not white. And in the center of that circle was an iron spike. Impaled on this spike was a human skull. And as they looked to the floor, they saw blood sprayed into the dirt and chicken feathers scattered around. They were shocked, but they were inquisitive young boys too, and so they decided to examine this skull. They'd never seen one before. It was missing its lower jaw. Duncan reached out and touched it, and then gripping it in his hands, he tugged hard and managed to eventually prise it free from that iron spike. And then Calvin gathered up the bones and they both took them outside. They placed the skeleton on the grass of the churchyard and at that point realized they hadn't had their packed lunch yet. So they sat on the tombstones and got stuck into some Spam sandwiches, chatting about the human skeleton at their feet. After they finished their sandwiches and orange juice, they picked up the bones again and started wandering around the churchyard, unsure of what to do with them. Which was the moment when a married couple happened to be walking nearby. Horace and Madge Groom had been visiting the grave of a relative when they heard the boys playing in the church. But when they saw what they were playing with, they were appalled. When confronted, Duncan lifted the skull up saying, "We just found this in the church, that's all." But the grooms didn't believe them. They were convinced that these two young boys from Luton had just robbed a grave. So the adults marched the two lads back down the hill so they could go and see the rector of the church, a reverend called Lewis Barker. They carried the skull and bones with them. Reverend Barker had no idea that this event and the aftermath would eventually drive him almost to madness. But for now, he called the police. Barker realized that the boys hadn't been responsible and he believed their story, and so he allowed them to leave on their bikes going back to Luton. But now, the story was out. Because the bones were out, and there was no sense in denying it. There had been some kind of black magic ritual last night in the old church of Clop Hill. The police arrived later on that Saturday afternoon, but by now, word had spread, and along with the police came the local media with many questions. And so, trying to seek answers to them, the police and the rector hurried up to the church to examine the damage. And they were sickened by what was there. They found a large stone slab inside the church nave just in front of the altar, and on it they did indeed find a selection of more human bones. Arranged in a grotesque pattern of arm bones, leg bones, shin bones, and a pelvis. And they found that iron spike which had been rammed into a crack in the floor and quickly realized that the spike had been prized off one of the metal window frames that still lined the stone, though there had been no glass up in this church for years. And yes, just like the boys had said, they found clear evidence of animal sacrifice. A cockerel had been slaughtered in that place. There were symbols daubed on the walls too in white paint. Once the place had been assessed, they had to ask, who did these bones belong to? Well, it didn't take long to figure it out. Because when they examined the area outside the church, they found a set of tombs that sat amongst the overgrown grass. There was a crowbar and some wood nearby. These tombs were the, like, tabletop type, you know? And it was clear that someone had tried to get into six of them last night. But the seventh, however, is the one that had been smashed over. And when they leaned over that tomb, now without that stone cover, they could see into an 8-foot-deep rectangular pit. And they found the cover of that tomb, which finally put a name to the skull and bones that had been found that day. It read,
"In memory of Jenny, the wife of Lawrence Humberstone, who departed this life January the 30th, 1770, aged 22 years."
So the skull's name was Jenny, whose head had, 200 years earlier, rested on the shoulder of her husband, the local apothecary or chemist. The police were disgusted, of course, but none so much as Reverend Barker, who insisted that her tomb cover be put straight back on. But this was not easy. It took the Barker and five burly police officers to manage to put the stone back, which only confirmed that the two young boys could not possibly have done this horrendous act. Whoever did, however, must have been more than just one or two people. Must have been a group. Several people had woken Jenny from her 200 years sleep last night, but the question was, who and why? In the days that followed, media interest in this case was huge, and various journalists and writers quizzed the locals on this grim desecration of graves. What was really shocking, however, was when the journalists started to uncover a secret. You see, this had not been the first time graves had been broken into in that place. In previous years, the graves up at that old church had been tampered with on at least three separate occasions in the last few years. It was becoming the focus of something ghoulish. Now, as for Jenny's bones, they were not returned to the grave straight away. In fact, Reverend Barker wrapped those bones up in tarpaulin and took them to the church vestry and locked them in a cupboard. He wanted to organize an archdeacon to come and rebury them in a sacred ceremony. Meanwhile, reporters flocked to the village and swamped the church for answers. At one point, a reporter from the Times newspaper asked Reverend Barker if this was the work of devil worshippers. The rector said this,
"I do not discount the idea of black magic. I am told there are people who are inclined that way in Amtill."
Amtill is a town just a few miles from Clop Hill. According to the author Kevin Gates, who wrote an excellent book on this topic called The Paranormal Diaries, Clop Hill, he said that there were widespread rumors of a witch's coven in Amtill at the time, and these rumors grew even more when the Amtill News reported on this grave desecration, but they included unique details like how the toe bones were missing from the collection, and it wasn't clear how Amtill News were getting this detailed information, and so some thought, could it be part of a local conspiracy of an Amtill coven? The Archdeacon of Bedford arrived on the Monday, and so both he and Reverend Barker went up to the church to look at the damage, and they found some gawkers looking at the place themselves. This had been happening more and more since the discovery on Saturday, and among these people were two strange men who approached the Reverend and the Bishop and started speaking to them in foreign accents. They told the clergyman that they were from Bedford and that they were both interested in black magic. And Reverend Barker realized at that moment that these two men assumed that he and the bishop were part of this black magic cult that had performed this ritual and that they wanted to be part of it. Barker took down his number plate and told police, who traced the plates not to Bedford, but to London. This was a mystery, made even more odd when it was discovered that in the previous month, a man had been walking amongst locals in the village asking if occult practices went on in Clop Hill. He'd also asked those questions in Amtill. Stories of the black magic horror at Clop Hill continued to appear in national newspapers, though some occultists claimed that the ritual just seemed less like devil worship and more like necromancy, contacting the dead. Whatever the case, after a week had passed, it was on Saturday, 23rd of March, that Jenny Humberstone was quietly reinterred into her grave at a service with Reverend Barker and some villagers. On Sunday, Barker announced that a fund was being set up to repair the seven damaged tombs, and perhaps after this week had passed, the Reverend thought it was all over. Jenny had been reburied. The world must surely be moving on from this unpleasant incident. But then, Just after lunch on that Sunday, somebody came to the rectory in a state of distress. The rector had reburied Jenny just one day before, but now on the Sunday, it had been discovered that someone had broken into her tomb again. Yes, someone had once again smashed into Jenny's tomb, dragged off the stone cover, and snatched her bones and skull. And once again, they had been scattered inside the church. They must have done this on the very night she was reinterred. So Barker went back to the church and gathered up the bones, but this time he didn't rebury them. He decided to hide them from whoever seemed obsessed with removing them in the first place. Then, 2 weeks after the initial discovery on Sunday, 31st of March, there had been yet another desecration of Jenny Humberstone's tomb. It seems like whoever had broken into her tomb was after her bones. Whether they wanted them for some arcane ritual or just a souvenir of a national news story is unclear. What is clear, though, is that they were obviously furious when they got to the bone and found that the bones were missing. That was, of course, because Reverend Barker still had them in safekeeping somewhere, though nobody knew where he kept them. The grave robbers let out their frustration at the empty tomb by smashing it and others. And so now this gaping open tomb had become something of a local tourist attraction. Reverend Barker called the gawkers who would come to look ghouls and vandals. Yet it was difficult to keep people away, because not only Clop Hill, but the surrounding area and the rest of the country was starting to catch on to black magic fever. Clearly, this story was catching the imagination of the public, because at the time, the Luton News ran a report on Luton Library. The librarians there were noticing a marked increase in requests for books on the subject of black magic. Indeed, 1963 seemed to spark a flurry of strange activity that would be labelled as black magic, including a truly horrible incident of cattle mutilation. Yes, just 3 weeks after the two boys from Luton discovered the desecrated grave, two completely different boys from Luton had been playing in a place called Bluebell Wood. This is only a mere 10 to 12 miles away from Clop Hill. And yet, on Tuesday, the 9th of April, 1963, the boys found, amidst a horrendous stench, a selection of animal heads scattered under the bushes in the wood. There were no bodies. The police were called, and the heads examined by an RSPCA officer called John Goodenough. That's the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. He found that the jawbones of these animals had been wrenched apart, and Goodenough said that the eyeballs of the animals had been completely severed. One of the eyes had even been suspended from a branch overlooking two circles formed by trampled down undergrowth. He believed also that the gnarled tree from which this eye was hanging was the correct shape to be used as an altar. The heads had been horribly battered and mutilated, some of them even shot twice. It's not surprising to hear then that people assumed that this was even more occult worship, especially since the heads were discovered on the morning after a full moon. Though occult experts pointed out that jawbones aren't really featured in black magic rites. Whatever the case, when UFO sightings started to take place in Bluebell Wood area, that's in the 1970s, some researchers started to wonder if the heads had not been part of not a satanic ritual, but some kind of alien cattle mutilation. But let's stay back in 1963, in this horrible find in Bluebell Wood that came a mere 3 weeks and 10 miles away from Clop Hill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It was making many feel a little frightened that their sleepy little towns and picturesque English villages were populated by hidden witches, warlocks, and necromancers, determined to come out at night to defile the holy spaces. Indeed, in the same march as the incident in Clop Hill, only 20 miles away in Garston, a priest called Father Albert Davy went to the police after receiving threats related to so-called black magic, He said that a bundle of twigs with red-stained rags had been found on the church lawn and a rosary had been stolen from the church. Then on the 24th of May, the Daily Mirror reported on four youths who sneaked into a church in Amersham, that's 40 miles away from Clop Hill, and they openly admitted that they were trying to steal a skull because one of the boys had attended a black mass once, he claimed, and wanted a skull for his mantelpiece. Churches across the country were starting to lock their doors at night for fear of desecration and rituals. It carried on into the autumn, when a spooky discovery was made in King's Lynn on the 21st of September. There's an ancient stone castle near King's Lynn, about 80 miles northeast of Clop Hill, and a bricklayer called, ironically, Conrad Gore, found seven effigies of male and female clay figures nailed to the door of the castle, each with a thorn stabbed into its heart, and next to them was a sheep's heart, which had 13 hawthorns sticking out of it. There was a circle of soot and animal teeth on the ground. Throughout the rest of the year, other ritualistic items were found in the churches like St. Clement Church in Lyon-Sea, where the Reverend found a sheep's heart stuck with 13 thorns, and the heart had been placed on the grave of a woman who was thought to have been a witch. By Christmas of 1963, the antics of the so-called black magicians were growing even more bold. A group of what the newspapers called devil men performed a ritual inside not a ruin of a church, but a fully functioning one. They didn't even do it at night either, but in the bold afternoon of a Saturday on the 7th of December. They were discovered by a bell ringer called Walter Binstead, who walked into the church to find four men standing by the altar, the candles burning in the shape of a cross, and these men were chanting in Latin and dancing around the candles. Binstead said the dancing was slow at first, but then it turned into a disturbing frenzy. They danced around those candles like creatures from hell itself, he said. But despite attempts to stop them, they managed to escape and drove off in a blue and grey Ford. Meanwhile, Reverend Ernest Street of Bramber Village in Sussex was absolutely furious when vandals smashed off the heads of angel statues in his church. They also smashed off a stone cross and leant it against the church door, scrawling in chalk occult symbols. Reverend Street stood in the pulpit that Sunday in defiance and shocked parishioners with the following statement. Listen to this.
I pronounce a curse on those who touch God's acre in this churchyard. May their days be of anguish and sorrow, and may God have mercy on their souls. My curse shall stand, and I will not relent until these people apologize and ask for forgiveness.
There were other incidents of so-called black magic in churches throughout the year, but let's return back to our focus tonight, St. Mary's in Clop Hill, the site of the original incident. Because it was there that Reverend Barker was starting to feel the unbearable strain of this explosion of occult interest in his church, a strain that threatened to almost push him to the very brink of a complete breakdown. Even before the events of 1963, Reverend Barker's life had been a challenging one. Barker had been married in 1932, but was divorced in 55. His wife was staying at the old vicarage at nearby village Flitton in 1958, when she took her own life with barbiturate poisoning. She was found with an envelope in her hands containing family photographs. Later, Barker would face even more tragedy when his young daughter was hit by a car in nearby Shefford. She was killed. By September of 1963, Reverend Barker was exhausted with the aftershocks from this ritualistic discovery in the old church. For a start, he was now receiving hundreds of letters from people, some of which expressed sympathy for the attack on the church, but many that were either excited or curious about black magic. Others were obscene and disturbing. He was interviewed by the writers Arthur Selwood and Peter Haining, and said that the incident had started a relentless sense of paranoia. He told them,
"All the time I was haunted by the fear that the ghouls responsible for this dreadful event would be watching me. I dreaded lest they should again profane and violate the church. I've never encountered an outrage anywhere quite as horrible as this."
Then there was the matter of Jenny's bones, which Barker had become to obsess over. He had pledged to give Jenny a proper reburial, but her grave had now been tampered with multiple times. The strain was agonizing, he said.
I concealed her bones in a cupboard for days before I felt safe to move them and reinter them, and not even my nearest and dearest know where Jenny lies today.
Some believed the bones had been reburied in her grave and covered with 8 tons of soil, but the reality was rather more stark. Reverend Barker had kept the bones in the boot of his car, not just for the rest of 1963, but it was claimed for many years afterwards. Gates even spoke to a local in Clophill who claimed that Reverend Barker took these bones to the local pubs and showed them in exchange for a free pint. I recently spoke to another woman who lived in the area at the time, and she confirmed that she had been in a Clophill pub one night when Reverend Barker had done just that. If life was a strain after the initial desecration, it just got worse for Barker, to the extent that maybe he thought that Clophill had a curse, not only because of his tragedies, but also his predecessors. A Reverend Patterson from the Clophill Church was found dead in the rectory hallway one day. He was propped against the front door. He'd had some sort of seizure and had fallen and hit his head, killing him in the process. That was 1934. Barker was still scared of grave desecrations, even in 1969, when he received a tip-off from a parishioner that some occult group was about to carry out yet another ritual in the church. And I find this image of him really sad and unnerving. Reverend Barker wanted to organize a vigil that night to keep watch, but nobody wanted to help. So at around Midsummer's Eve, Reverend Barker carried out a solo vigil up at the church. Barker went there, committed to putting a stop to any ritualistic activity, and he sat there in the darkness of the ruined church for 3 lonely nights in a row. I've been up there myself at midnight, and I can tell you it's pretty damn scary. And on the last night, he said this.
I waited by myself one night at the church, staying until 3 a.m., but nothing happened.
Satisfied the church was safe, he walked home and went to bed. And yet, when the rector went back up to the church the following morning, he said,
I found that 2 tombs in the chancel had been opened and the skulls removed.
He also found 7 black candles. It was a disturbing discovery, but as Gates writes,
what perhaps shook him the most was how the desecrators must have been lurking in the shadows that night, waiting for him to finally turn in, and then they struck.
In time, Barker felt there was nothing else to be done, and he sought permission to have the old church demolished. This didn't happen, and on the doctor's advice, Reverend Barker decided the stress was too much, and he decided to quit the parish. He told the Sunday Express,
this has got me down. My nerve is going, and on the doctor's advice, I'm retiring. In the 7 years since I came to Clophill, not a month has gone by without one of the graves or tombs in the churchyard being dug up and some sort of rite performed.
He moved out of the rectory on Halloween night of 1969, and he moved to his new home, a cottage in Hitchin. That very night, the old church was swamped with hundreds of teenagers, some from as far afield as Stevenage and Hitchin. They had come for evidence of witchcraft. The police were called to break up the crowds. There was no sign of black magic ritual in the church that night. Was that because it was over? Not really. Because it actually had been carried out 5 miles away instead, in a ruin of a place called Houghton House near Ampt Hill. This house is thought to feature in John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress as House Beautiful. But the day after Halloween, children discovered something rather not beautiful. They found black candles and a white circle with a sheep's heart in the center. Reverend Barker may have felt some relief in Hitchin, to be now some distance from the dark goings-on of the old church he knew so well. Until one day he opened the front door of his Hitchin cottage to find the remnants of an occult ritual on his path. And so the old church in Clophill had become something of a magnet for grave desecration and occult rituals in the 1960s and beyond. But since then, it has also become known as a place of paranormal activity.
Join me for the second part of this 2-part episode exploring Clophill, the church that terrified a nation, where we'll be diving into the weird and creepy paranormal experiences that have gone on in that church, including something really rather spooky that happened to me when I was up there. That is next on Frightful. And if you've been enjoying these, please consider subscribing. I'm just a small channel and it makes a big difference. Thanks. And don't forget, keep an eye on the shadows. They might just have their eye on you. Good night.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.